Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki Balancing Form and Essence. Well, our study in community is going to another community, which is a worldwide community, much like Reiki, actually. There was a man by the name of Bhagwan Rajneesh, when I was growing up and becoming aware of spiritual practices in India. He was one of the people that came up in my radar because many of my friends and then Reiki students and then Reiki masters that I knew were devotees of Bhagwan. And of course, he eventually changed his name, let that all go to Osho, and his presence still lives on in the world. I have lots of Reiki students from Russia and the former Soviet Union countries, Latin America, the North and South Americas, and Europe, who are still very devoted to his teachings and feel that his teachings have really impacted their lives, and of course beneficially. A global community is something that we're all kind of grappling with, and before the internet happened, it was very, very hard to understand who the global community could be. But now that we have the internet, we have Facebook pages, this global community is becoming more real, if you want to put it that way. Like, you can actually have names and conversations with people from all over the world. People who have had the same experience as you do, the same spiritual upliftment, and the same and they have the same dedication to the same practice, which is something that I find quite astonishing. So I have with me today a man that I've known for, I think, 30 years or so. His name is Vivavan. And his other name is Tom Fisher, although I really can't relate to Tom Fisher very much. So we're going to welcome Vivavan to the show today. And I'm so glad that you and I have finally gotten together.
Me too, Bill.
So Vivavan, gosh, I'd love to hear your Reiki story. Can you start from the beginning?
First, I'd like to take a deep breath. Phyllis, I'm going to turn off some speakers here and see if that may help. Just a moment.
All right.
So, my Reiki story. Where to begin? First of all, I want to say thank you. Thank you, Phyllis, for sending me a message on Skype with just one question asking, will I see your face again? And it was so beautiful because that was all I needed while I was in Brazil to know that I was going to come back to Sedona and drive down to the Kenyan ranch and meet you one more time. And here we are. So thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
So my story began back in 1984 when I didn't know anything about Reiki. I had never heard the word before, and I didn't know what meditation was. I had no experience, and I was going through a major change of life, and I remember one night just screaming to God, and I said, God, help me. I can't feel. I've lived such a full life, but there's something in me which is empty. And a week later, I picked up my first book in a bookstore of Osho, and a week later, I was at his commune asking what goes on around here. And they said, meditation. And I said, what is that?
Wow.
And they said, well, why don't you find out for yourself tomorrow morning at 6 o'clock? And I said, well, it's impossible because I just ran a marathon, and I'm going to be sleeping in at 6 o'clock. Well, at 4 o'clock, I was wide awake. I went to my first meditation, and I was totally blown away by the experience that I had never had before. It was an act of meditation. And I spent a weekend there and then came back to do a workshop a few weeks later, and it was the first workshop I had ever done in my life looking at myself. It was a breath group. And at the end of it, I tripped and I sprained my left ankle. And a woman helped me. We were going to a discourse that evening and sitting on the floor of the auditorium, she asked me, "Would you like Reiki?" And I asked her, "What's that?" She said, "Just be quiet and feel." And she put her hands on my left ankle, which was quite swollen. And must have held my ankle for about 45 minutes. A very long story, but the next morning I was jogging down to the auditorium to do another meditation, and I stopped and said, "This is impossible. How can I be running?" And then I went, "Wow, it must have been the Reiki." And 2 weeks later, I saw my first bulletin for a Reiki class, and I just said, "Yes, I want to go find out what this is about." And that was the beginning of my journey.
Wow, that's amazing. So what year was this, did you say?
This was in the fall of 1984.
Wow. A while ago. Yeah. So what's happened since then?
Well, I was totally touched by the Reiki class I did, and it supported the meditation I was starting to do at the community, because it was a way that I could center myself, and in those days I didn't know what that word meant. It was a way I could just relax and be present with myself. And very quickly, I wanted to go on and do level two, but I waited a year because I wanted to have an experience of really giving Reiki to myself and some friends. And a year later, I connected with a beautiful man by the name of Phil Morgan. Paul Mitchell initiated me into my first Reiki class, and then Phil and Paul were there for the second class. And that again touched me deeply, because it had some intuitive feelings that it was possible to transmit loving energy, but this actually gave it a form. And then over a year passed, and I spoke with you and looked deeply into myself if I wanted to go further and round it off by being able to share my experience. And you and three other friends, we went up into the mountains in New Mexico, and you initiated me as a Reiki master, and my life changed forever. So I feel I could actually make this a 4-hour interview with the experiences that have happened. Phyllis, I'll just leave it for your questions. It's been so beautiful, the journey. I feel that Reiki has been guiding me step by step through all these 29 years now.
Great. Well, on my side, I remember the trip up into the mountains. We rode on horses, and what an amazing experience that was. And I was really into horse packing back then, and you and Shelley were so wonderfully brave to come and do one of my passions at the time. So I got to multitask instantly, which was really wonderful. What a great sight. And I remember this huge rock that we found where the initiation happened. It was really sweet. And so then I sort of lost track of you, because you ended up, I think, moving to Australia first. Is that true? Or was it Sedona first?
No, I moved with my wife, Shanto. She's Australian.
Yeah.
We moved to to Cannes, and then you and I actually had our last meeting before now on the Gold Coast, which was north of Byron Bay. We had moved down from right. Cannes, Miranda, to Byron Bay, and you were coming for a workshop, so I drove up, and we had just a couple days together, but that was the last time. So moved to Australia, and then had a beautiful project, was doing Reiki with friends, and taught some classes. And then I came back to visit my son at Arizona State and came up to Sedona to meet a woman by the name of Kavisha, who was a very beautiful woman in our community who started the what we call the Mystery School. It was a school of self-exploration in India, and then moved to Sedona with three of her friends. And I came and we had a meeting, and I just shared that there was something that still felt incomplete. She gave me some guidance, and it just went right to my heart. So I went back to Australia and told my wife, I need to move back to the United States. I'd like you to come with me. And we just dropped everything and then came here to Sedona and lived here for several years, getting involved in a school that we created for self-exploration called the Osho Academy. And she left her body in 98, and at that point, I felt like I was completing my time here in Sedona, and it was time to move on.
Uh-huh. So when you talk about mystery school, what does that mean to you? I'm curious.
For me, it's been like you were talking at the beginning of this interview about community, a community of like-minded individuals who have a similar purpose, and that purpose is to get to know ourselves. Before I had started meditating, my life was all out, 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 in business, in family, and hobbies, and activities, and socializing. And I had never had the experience of balancing that with going inside and finding that place that could just stop and be. So the mystery school for me first was a place where like-minded individuals would come and meditate and do workshops to explore different aspects of ourselves. And within that school, there was Reiki as one of the healing arts that was offered. And explorations into our inner world.
So it wasn't like, sometimes when I think of mystery school, it's sort of like learning incantations and magic potions and stuff like that.
No, for me this was, and what I've experienced is just the opposite. I remember reading a little bit of Ouspensky about Gurdjieff and his work with people, and he called it a mystery school, but it was just, he would just gather with men at the bar, this Russian mystic,
right.
and they would drink and reveal themselves, and he would give discourses. So the form there was very different than what I've ever experienced, but for me it's very much about becoming more grounded, more here, more present. And more loving.
So it basically has, mystery school has to do with, exploring the mystery of who we are as human beings, or the part that we don't know about, or?
For me it was, just having the first experience of stopping and looking inside and getting in touch with feelings and emotions. And, you know, my journey started when I just screamed out, I can't feel. You know, I said, I can't feel. It's something that feels stuck and empty inside. And for me, getting involved in the school and in the meditation center was an opportunity to start awakening to my feelings and emotions. And and feeling and looking at those.
Great. So when you joined, say, when you went to Australia, I seem to recall that you were a part of an Osho-related community there on the Gold Coast. Is that true?
Well, I was starting a project outside of Byron Bay, and it was on 50 acres, building roads and digging lakes and meditating in the evening with friends. And some were sannyasins, and those were, you know, disciples of Osho, and many other friends. In my whole life, I've just had this love and interest and respect for each of us being on our own path. And so there were many friends who were participating that were in different communities, and we would just enjoy coming together and working, you know, planting trees and eating under shaded trees and looking out at the ocean and sitting together at night. It was very simple.
Wow, beautiful.
And there were many sannyasins there, but, you know, it wasn't about creating a community. It was just respecting the naturalness of what wanted to happen. And so at that phase, it was just friends coming together. And I see that actually when you ask me about a mystery school. I just see friends coming together in an exploration.
Interesting. So when I talk about, for instance, the global Reiki community, do you have a sense about what that, well, what does that mean to you, if anything?
Well, it's interesting because I'm kind of a loner. I haven't really gotten myself involved in what I would call organizations. I see they exist, and I feel there's a beauty in the grounding and the form that they may take, but for some reason, that hasn't been, you know, my interest. I've been interested, of course, in my own exploration and the exploration of many of my friends. What I saw happen in the Reiki community was that shortly after you initiated me, I feel a huge shift happened in terms of your letting go of the initiation of masters and allowing, not allowing, but seeing what wanted to happen of masters initiating other masters. And that just opened up the worldwide Reiki community into so many different expressions. And it's been just interesting for me to watch in the Osho community how that also, you know, found different expressions. My friend Elaine, who's visiting, that was down with you in southern Arizona, she's visiting for a week. We were laughing because there's so many different Reikis offered here. We saw shamanic Reiki, angelic Reiki, life particle transmissions, so many different expressions. And I just kind of watched all that and stayed with, well, what does Reiki mean for me? And it basically is very simple. Hands on, hands off. It's a mystery. People have asked me, how does Reiki work in your life? And I said, I don't know, but it does.
So for me, I guess, in tying up your comments, the Reiki, global Reiki community would be the people who come together because they've had similar experiences of Reiki and similar interests.
I feel that the Reiki global community today has many different expressions. And so, for example, I could sit with somebody who does Diksha, which is from a tradition in India, the Oneness University. It's a transmission of energy, and I feel like we could relate, and we could talk.
Right.
I could sit with the people who are doing the angelic Reiki and say, interesting, how is that for you? And through the essence of Reiki, I feel we're all having a similar experience, but because we have minds, we're trying to create different understandings of what that is. So therefore, the different expressions or the different colors of the rainbow. Mm-hmm. And I love it because wherever I go in the world, which is now basically Brazil and India, and here in the States, when I connect with Reiki people, we just have an instant connection.
Right. Which I find is really amazing. Like, I remember in the 1980s, I would send somebody to the airport to meet somebody flying in from Europe. And at that point, it was very unusual to meet these people. And it was really out of our local community. So we didn't know them. We didn't know what they looked like or anything. But they would always come back and say, oh, I knew exactly who the Reiki person was. I just had to watch the people and notice the twinkle in their eye or just have a feeling, you know, for this person. And at that time, I was pretty skeptical about those things. So I would always, in my mind, go, oh, yeah, right. And was glad that they connected however they did and that that person had been picked up and cared for. But now, of course, that kind of comment has a lot of substance for me. And I just see that sometimes when I'm on the airplane, I could almost, you know, go down the aisle and pick out a few people who seem to be having Reiki. And there are, of course, lots of times when I'm on an airplane these days or in an airport where I just see people with their hands on themselves going, I think they're doing Reiki. Mm-hmm. So I haven't gotten the courage up enough to tap them on the shoulder, though, and ask, which has been interesting. I don't know why I'm shy, but maybe it's just that I'm in a different headspace. We're all traveling somewhere, and that's where
right.
I am. Yeah. So it's great to have these places on the planet where in the Osho community people can come together. Like in the early days of doing the Reiki gatherings in the Netherlands, in Egmond on Zee, which is this little town outside of a little larger small city called Alkmaar, there's a place called Humaniversity, which is an Osho-run mystery school, and it's still going very strong, and this has been 30 years, and I always enjoyed the contact with the people from there. I always felt very akin to them, and I feel like it's because, in some way, the basis was getting to oneness, getting to these experiences of oneness, knowing that we are all one as human beings and that as a universe we are connected, and being, you know, striving to live from that place. And I'm just wondering if that's your experience, because this is totally my imagination since I'm not a devotee, the sannyasin.
Well, I'm smiling because of the synchronicity which is happening right this moment between us.
Really?
In that I've been to the Humaniversity many times, and I've been trained by Varesh, who is the founder and leader of the Humaniversity in Egmond. And one of the things that I've always respected about Varesh and his work and the workshops and groups and trainings I've done with him was exactly what I experienced with my first and second Reiki master and with yourself. There was an aspect that went right to my heart of, these people are real. As they're sitting here with me, the mask of personality have been taken off. And of course we can put the mask of personality on anytime we want to play and just socialize. But there's another space, and we're touching it, I feel, right now in our interview. There's a space that comes from the heart. There's a space of this oneness that you're describing where we can sense if somebody is real. And when I say real, I mean whole. They are centered within themselves, the way they're transmitting their words or their actions. You can feel it. Maybe that's why you can walk down the aisle of an airplane and actually have a sense of somebody giving themselves Reiki. Because there's this moment when we go inside, where we touch closer to source, where we touch closer to being. If you look at the layers that I've watched myself, on the outer I have my personality, and then I have my going further inside my emotions, and further inside my gifts that I can share, and further inside natural qualities of love and caring. And then there's a center. And that center is spaciousness, silence, peace, relaxation. And when I first met Paul, and when I first met Phil, and when I connected with you, I was touched by a quality that I had not been aware of before. And with Varesh and his work at the Humana University, these people are about getting real and taking off the mask and finding that place inside where, you know, Osho used to call it Zorba the Buddha. Where Zorba's outside, we can enjoy life to the fullest, truly loving all the different things and expressions of life we can experience. And balancing that with the Buddha, that place inside where we can rest and be alone and regenerate. So yes, I feel the Humaniversity is absolutely one of these diamonds on the planet where people are coming together, and I'm guessing very few now are actually sannyasins. Just as I was talking about the community in Byron Bay, people are attracted to this. Some people, it's a mystery as to timing. It took me 40 years before I woke up to it. But some people are attracted to this this energy, this experience, and want to experience it for themselves. So the majority of people going to Humaniversity now are not sannyasins. They are, maybe they've connected through others who they felt something, like I felt with Paul and with Phil and with yourself.
Oh, interesting. So the Humaniversity is open to anybody who wants to come and partake, as long as they're sincere.
Yeah, it's a very intense school, and it's total. And they offer many different programs on their website. Varesh has this dear love for his master, Osho, and it continues even though Osho is out of the body. A very beautiful devotion because of the changes that have happened in his own life by being around what I call real people.
Mm-hmm. Wow, cool. Well, that's interesting. And so do you feel that these communities that have sprung up all over the world, because I know that they are all over the world, I only have had the great luck to run into a few of them myself. I wonder, do you feel that these communities, the living communities, add something to the energetic of we could call it maybe the global energetic system of the world? Like, do you feel that they have a greater purpose outside of the actual practice, that they create a kind of field of energy that influences the world around them?
You know, to be honest, Phyllis, I have to say I don't know.
Uh-huh.
Well, what I can share is that these communities that I've experienced are places where people can walk in and feel something. And it might be something that they've never felt before. It might be a feeling that they remember. I was down just last weekend visiting you and met some people from the Reiki world at the Kenyon Ranch. And the moment I drove onto the property, I stopped and I just stood for a moment and I went, wow, you know, there are ranches all over here, but this place has a certain energy, and I don't know what that is, but let's just feel it. I remember one time giving a tour to a woman from the American Embassy in Pune, and she stopped me as we were walking through the meditation resort, and she said, I'd like to ask you why you're here. And I responded by saying, well, let me ask you a question. Do you feel any different here than you did in a taxi cab in Bombay? And she said, absolutely. I said, well, that's my answer. She said, thank you, I got it. So people who are coming into these communities are experiencing something that they have to take back into their life. And because they have the experience, it's their own. And perhaps they have interest in coming back. I've seen many people, both with the Humaniversity as well as with the Osho International Meditation Resort now in Pune. They come, they have a first experience, and then they come back. And then all of a sudden they may be on a different path, but it's about what we call waking up, becoming present.
Uh-huh.
And it may be that their path is toward Buddhism. It might be back to their own Christian church, but with a different understanding or a different experience. So, you know, again, I call it the mystery, of how we're each on our own path, but yet there's something in common, and you might call this the wholeness, that we start to recognize in each other.
Uh-huh. Well, I've so appreciated the Osho community, because I feel that in Bhagwan's teaching, he really emphasized paying attention to the people around you. I guess that might be called the community. And I'm wondering if that seems true to you, that he felt that community was a really big part of our way to know ourselves better, like to put ourselves into a context rather than having just no context at all. So I don't know if I'm saying this.
No, I'm hearing clearly your question.
Oh, okay.
And
maybe you could
clearly... Osho was very clear that he encouraged people to live in communes. And what I understood from that wasn't commune in the old sense of a place where people live together. I looked at it more as community. Of people caring for each other. I'm here in Sedona, and I go to a Korean Don Hak meditation center to do yoga every morning, and a group came in the other day talking about the Time Bank. It's a new service in Sedona where people can exchange services and earn one token for every hour of service. Somebody may need a ride to another town. An elder might need to just be listened to for an hour. Somebody might need some carpentry. And I went, wow, so beautiful, this sense of community within the city of Sedona, and actually the valley, the Verde Valley, the whole area here, of people recognizing that, you know, one of the hardest things is to be in isolation. And many people don't even know it until all of a sudden they've had a touch of taste of community. That, wow, there's something more than just me and my house and the cat. And I'm doing it with some friends right now. There's five guys and we're connected here. And I said, hey, let's have a little sense of community of coming together for some evenings. And each of us share to the other men what's going on in our life and just be open to feedback. And that's going to start happening on Sunday. So there's many different forms that community can take. But Osho was very, very encouraging that that these connections start happening. And what I'm loving is that we see it in so many different expressions and so many different communities within the church. Elaine has been sharing with me some of the work that's happened in the church, within the Buddhist community, within the Oneness University in India, within, you know, I'm with a master now by the name of Prem Baba, and he is a living master for Brazil, and a beautiful community of caring, supportive, loving people, meditating, and then exploration is happening globally with that. So, yeah, it's happening all over the world.
So, I feel that this is becoming more and more prevalent. There are millions of people who are engaged in what I might call very loosely a spiritual practice, which includes churches and other forms of organized practice, as well as people just doing their own thing. And I'm wondering if what your cosmology is sort of about the role that community plays in making the world a different place. Like, there is this kind of interesting book called The Tipping Point, which a lot of people are reading. I got turned on to The Tipping Point by my nephew about a month ago. And the author is Malcolm Gladwell, and it's kind of the 100th monkey syndrome from the 1980s. Turned into more of a business language. And I really like this process, because I feel like there's a quality to the globalization of humanity that's happening. I don't think the globalization of farming, for instance, has been quite so productive, as it were. But I think the globalization of human beings has allowed us to form these global spiritual communities that I feel like really are making a difference. And I don't know if you feel that way.
I feel that the difference is happening on many levels, at the individual level, at the group level for those who are involved, at the level for those who are coming into the community, as I tried to share with this experience of the woman who came from the embassy,
right,
to Pune, of having an experience. And then we start moving out into what I call the unknown, of what the effects of these ripples are out. And I feel it's a fine line, because I can take a deep breath and go, wow, in my 30 years from not having any understanding of or experience of what meditation meant or what Reiki meant, to see how many thousands of people now are meditating and are doing Reiki. And wow, in such a short period of time, there's been an explosion of understanding and this experience. The reason I say it's a fine line is that I like to just hold that effect that it's having on the big picture. I'll leave it in God's hands, in the unknown. It's beyond me. And my responsibility is to be as loving and aware with myself as I can be, with my family, with my friends, and my community, and then say, wow, that's our work, to be as total as we can here, as opposed to me being a do-gooder and trying to go out and once again go too far out trying to make things happen. And there are some gifted people, I'm sure, on the planet who have that skill that I don't have, but I to try to answer your question, Phyllis, I say, I'm absolutely feeling that ripples are going out. And the responsibility comes back to ourselves, our community, and an openness to all the other expressions of this consciousness that's expanding and growing.
Uh-huh.
Did that answer your question?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just sent me spinning into another...
You know, I feel like telling a story. I feel like telling a short story because...
Go for it.
It may summarize what I'm trying to say. When I first started doing Reiki in Oregon... in those days, I was a hunter, and hunting just dropped out of my life. It wasn't anything moral, right or wrong. It was my passion before I opened up to Reiki and to meditation. And then it just, 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, faded away, almost like it doesn't exist. But I remember one hunting trip driving a dentist from Portland up to the Eagle Cap Wilderness, and we were packing horses and mules in for a hunting trip, and he asked me, "What are you doing with your life, Tom?" And I said, "Well, actually, I'm doing Reiki." And he asked me to explain it to him, and I tried, and he said, "I think it's all a bunch of hoof." Wow. And I took a couple deep breaths and finished the ride with him. And he said, "I just think you're wasting your time with this hoo-ha called Reiki." And I didn't respond. I just felt. And in the middle of the night, one of our horses was kicking, and he cut his left rear fetlock, which is just behind the ankle, on buried barbed wire that was in the ground. And he tore open the whole back, and it was, we heard him. And we all went out, and he was bleeding severely. And we tried to tourniquet it and bandage it, and it couldn't stop. And so we thought we would lose this horse. And so I just sat down, the others went back to bed, and I just put my hands around his ankle, and some songs were coming to me. You know, stayed there for a couple hours. And the bleeding stopped. And I was able to bandage, the horse's name was Lucky. I was able to bandage Lucky. And we got him out, and he survived and became a great pet. We never packed him again. But the end of the story is that in the morning when the dentist came out, he looked at the whole scene, and of course I was quite tired, and he looked at me and he said, "What did you do?" And I said, "Reiki." And he said, "Man, I don't understand you or what this is, but I just acknowledge that the horse isn't going to die, and so I honor something in what you're doing that I don't understand." And I share that story, Phyllis, because I've always felt that that was an example of where I was doing my own thing, sharing my gift, which you passed on to me, and the lineage passed on. And it had some effects, and it had an effect on this man, and what he did with it was his destiny and his life. But something had changed in him in terms of his attitude.
Uh-huh. Well, there's something really sweet about the acknowledgement of mystery in our lives, like, when I grew up, it just seemed like between science and history, mankind knew everything. We were like this. Now I just have to laugh. But, you know, there's this kind of video game or movie series or something called Masters of the Universe or something like that. And it's this kind of mythology that human beings are the masters of the universe, and we have the power to change anything that we want to, and which has ended up in some pretty interesting situations. But then something happens, and it just throws off all current thought and disproves whatever theories we have carrying around in our heads. So I feel that one of the gifts that Reiki has offered me, and one of the power of community, is that we get to acknowledge that we don't know everything, and that there is an element of mystery or unknown that we carry with us, which actually is the motivating force for everything, including getting to know who we are. And I found that story to be really beautiful in that he couldn't understand it. The dentist couldn't understand it, but he was willing to admit that it existed.
Yes.
And that's huge.
That was huge. Because again, it wasn't going to be his path, but something of the unknown, had opened to him, and an aspect of life that he had never experienced, just like a couple of years before, I had never experienced. What does it mean just to sit and close your eyes and, bring your awareness into your breath?
Right.
That world just never, I just didn't know it. And then, life gets a little fuller and a little more fuller and go, wow. And I see it as a mystery on how for so many years you and I didn't connect in physical body. And yet every time I gave a Reiki session or a class, I would stop, feel my heart, connect with the lineage. And there would be a smile on my face. And I just accepted, maybe I'm not going to see Phyllis again. And I don't know why. And then how beautifully you send that invitation. Will I see your face again? I see this is all the mystery and how, wow. I get a car that I didn't know would make it down to southern Arizona, and the guy fixed it beautifully, and now we're having this talk. This, to me, is the wow of life.
Right. I agree. So can you talk a little bit about your community? It's not really new, but your new community that you're involved with, and I need to get my head around a guru that comes from Brazil.
Prem Baba was a well-known psychologist, therapist in Brazil, who at some point said, this isn't it. And his inner guide, his inner voice, if you like, took him to India, and he connected with a man by the name of Maharaji, who was with a lineage, a Hindu lineage called the Satya lineage. And there was an instant connection of what I want to call the mystery of not knowing, you know, why I'm being pulled here. But he woke up. And he became enlightened. And he has a tremendous love for his master who left his body 2 years ago. Just as Buresh has his tremendous love for Osho, who also left his body. And around Prem Baba, many people were feeling something very real and very beautiful and just wanted to sit in his presence, just as I and my wife Chantal left Australia to come and sit in the presence of Kavisha here in Sedona many years ago for the few years that she had left of her body. And Prem Baba's work is what he calls the way of the heart, of community coming together in awareness, in love, and meditation, and self-exploration. And when I experience the community both in Brazil as well as in India, he goes to India every year, mid-December through mid-April, in Laxmajula, which is just north of Rishikesh. And he's actually doing a live broadcast Sunday to the world on prembaba.org. and it'll be at 12 o'clock noon Sedona time. I don't know what time that is. It's 9 hours later over in Spain. But he does a live broadcast, which is like a live satsang. And so community is actually changing. This will be the third live broadcast that he's done to the world. Community, when I first met him, was just a group of people in Fortaleza, Brazil, and then I experienced an expanded community in Rishikesh, India, and now people all over the world can receive his, what's called the flower of the day, a message that he sends out every day to anybody who's interested in reading it, and once a month going to this live satsang.
Well, I find it amazing that, I find it amazing. You know, my grandmother's favorite books were The Life and Teachings of the Masters of the Far East. A set of five books. They're very small, very thin. That was written by, an Englishman, I believe, and, whose name escapes me right now. And they were very popular in the 1970s and went out of print, and now they're back in print because somebody gave me a gorgeous, you know, set of them bound and everything. And basically it's a controversial set of books because there's one story where this guy just made it up, everything. And this other story where he went on this trek in northern India into the Himalaya, and he met all these amazing people who were doing these things that his mind couldn't comprehend. And in these stories, it's like these people who were enlightened, who were wise men of India, how he put it, would be able to reach around the globe with their mind and connect with all these people. So I just think of that, and then think of the reality of Prem Baba, for instance, putting out a global broadcast where a lot of the teachers now of all different kinds do, and how this is creating more of a physical net of energy that spans our world. So I'm interested in what will happen, because as you said, I agree, there's no way to tell what difference it will make, but it must make some difference.
Well, it's made a difference in my life. It's made a difference in the lives of many people that we both know.
Right.
I just like to add a couple points to what you just said. I would say both the wise men and women of this world, because enlightenment, wholeness, true love isn't just something the guys have. That I've also been blessed to be in the presence of some women who have the same gift as some of the men. And the second point, I feel that these masters are actually not transmitting so much from the mind or the head, but as from the heart. And it's from the heart that we can actually resonate and feel, is this real for me or not? The head will be in confusion, the head will have its beliefs, its opinions, but the heart, once we can find that place in ourselves, resonates. And I love a story that Osho told one time when I first went to the community in Oregon. He said, it's a mystery how a certain bee is attracted to a flower. And it's a mystery how other bees have no interest in that flower. And it's a mystery how other bees have no knowledge of that flower. So the we were using the word mystery or the unknown, how it affects us, these broadcasts that the masters and the teachers are sharing.
Right.
it's sending out a vibration that we'll each connect in our own way or not. And I feel that many people now are opening up to something which is real, and that is a balance inside of ourselves, of the inner and the outer, of the going for life as totally as we can, with as much aliveness as we can, and balancing that with this space inside, which is unknown to many people and was unknown to me 30 years ago.
That was beautifully said. Thank you. I have another question. This word enlightenment comes up, and there's a great conversation in the Reiki world about what is enlightenment. Because, of course, it doesn't come from this tradition. It comes from a tradition in India, of which I'm not really familiar. As you know, several years ago, maybe 20 years ago or so, I had scheduled a trip to India and realized I was going as a spiritual tourist, which didn't really fit my code of ethic about spiritual practice at the time. I really didn't like feeling spiritual tourism in Reiki, and I realized that I was becoming one in going to India, because I wasn't drawn there to partake of a spiritual practice. I was drawn there to go and look and see and see how it related to Reiki, which, I don't know, it didn't seem like an appropriate motivation, actually, to go to an ashram. So I didn't go, and I'd love for you to, in your own understanding, talk to me about the state of enlightenment. Like, what does that mean?
I feel like asking you a question.
Okay.
So describe to me what true love is. And you don't have to answer, Phyllis. It's almost a rhetoric. It's like I'm asking myself that. The real experiences in life, we have to experience. And the moment I try to speak about it, I lose something, because it's beyond my ability with my mind to convey the truth of it. For example, after you initiated me as a Reiki master, we were back at the stables, and somebody asked me, and I told you this story when we met last week, somebody asked me, what do you do? And I, from my mind, tried to explain what being a Reiki master meant to me.
Uh-huh.
And I realized I was bored with my own answer, and the guy was totally bored with my answer, and then he looked at you and he asked you, what do you do? And you said, I hang out with people, and somehow they change. And that was an arrow of enlightenment that went to my heart. And there was a moment of truth that you were speaking that not only went to my heart, but it changed my life forever. And I shared that story with hundreds of people around the world in coffee time together and in groups, of the transmission of the truth. That it was an arrow to my heart that changed my life. And I realize sometimes now I can sit with a friend and have coffee and just hanging out together, something happens.
Mm-hmm.
So I could write a book about what I think enlightenment is, or what enlightenment is, and I can't describe to anybody how it felt for me to sit with you that day at the stables and receive your transmission. That was just coming through you without any thought or planning, and how it was to sit with Osho, how it was to sit with Kavisha, and how it is now to sit with Prambhava. A man who can look into my eyes and say, you know, Vibhavan, you've played with all the toys of life. Wow, you really have gone for your life. And you're longing for something even more. And this is that longing that's taking us to truth, that's taking us to becoming real. And for me, I just say, you know, we could spend a lot of time talking about ideas, and the moment that we can just close our eyes or not and put our hands on somebody and feel something, we're having a direct experience of Reiki. I can have a direct experience of enlightenment, but it's my own. And for me to try to talk about it or share it, Phyllis, wouldn't do justice to it, because it's that flower that has attracted me in order for me to grow and flower and share my love and to, you know, love my kids more than I've ever loved them before, and you know, try to be even more loving and caring with my friends. But, you know, I guess there's lots of books. There's a New Age bookstore here on spirituality, and I guess you can, you know, buy many on what enlightenment is. I just don't want to go there with my mind.
Thank you. Great answer. And that.
And I don't know how much more time we have, but I don't want to miss this opportunity to say thank you, Phyllis, and thank you, life, for coming to me at a time 30 years ago when something from inside of me, and I don't know if it was my soul or my being, these are all names for something that I can feel but I can't explain, something inside of me was calling out for more than just being a businessman and a father and a horseback rider. And Reiki came into my life at a time that I feel just opened me to this unknown. And if I look back on what's happened over these 30 years ago, if I had wanted to make a business plan for my life, I would have, I have to laugh now and go, no way would I have possibly been able to even imagine the incredible things that have unfolded. And that's Varesh's teaching from the Humaniversity. How would it be if we all live our lives in a way where we wake up every morning and go, wow. Wow.
Wow. Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Vibhavan. Thank you. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.